21st. It is Wednesday, approximately 2:34 p.m. Madam Secretary, let's establish a quorum so we can move forward with today's agenda. Please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Atkins here.
Berryhill. Leyva.
Here.
Leyva here. Canella.
Here.
Canella here. De Leon.
Here.
De Leon here.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary. We've established a quorum. We do have one of our other colleagues who's on his way. Colleagues, we have file item number 2 through 11. Number 2 through 11, can I get a motion? We have a motion made by Ms. Leyva. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, aye. Berryhill. Leyva. Leyva, aye. Canella.
Aye.
Canella, aye. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Motion passes on a 4-0 vote. We're going to keep the roll open so Mr. Berryhill may add on if he wishes to do so. Why don't we go to our first appointee today, our first and only, which is Mr. Jerry E. Powers, who's currently the director of the Division of Adult Parole Operations, Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Mr. Powers, welcome. Why don't we do this? If you have any friends or loved ones, quickly introduce them. Just give us a quick synopsis of your person and let's get to questions and answers.
Okay.
Okay.
Friends and loved ones are DAPL headquarters folks.
Okay.
And from the governor's office.
Well, of course, everyone knows Nettie. I mean, Nettie is, that means this is a very huge appointment. They sent Nettie here to escort you.
Well, first, I'd just like to say thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to appear before you. A few thank yous and then just a couple of brief comments. I want to thank certainly Governor Brown for the appointment. Nettie, Diane, and the staff in the governor's office for their support and tutelage. I want to thank Secretary Kernan also. I can tell you I would not have would not be sitting here today if it weren't for Secretary Kernan and his persuasive powers at convincing me that this was a worthwhile endeavor on my part and that he was truly going to support what we're doing in DAPO, and certainly he walks the walk. I have to thank my family, my parents. I have a daughter, Amy, who's a deputy sheriff in Napa, and a son, who's Andrew, who's a probation officer in Modesto, and my son, Ryan, who's a freshman in high school. So I certainly am invested in public safety. I want to thank the headquarters staff that I acknowledged earlier. And lastly, I want to thank the 2,300 employees that are in DAPO. They do a tremendously difficult job every day. 1,500 of those employees are frontline parole agents. They work with 50,000 of the highest risk, highest need, serious and violent offenders in our state. They perform a remarkable high wire balancing act between offender needs and rehabilitation and community safety, while looking through a public safety lens that is California's ever-changing criminal justice system. I ask them to engage with and establish a rapport with individuals who've committed some of the most heinous acts our society can imagine. They're asked to use their training, experience, and judgment to decide which offenders remain in our society and those who are returned to custody, knowing full well that their decisions will not always result in successful outcomes, and that some of those outcomes and their actions and decisions will be scrutinized under an intense media and social media spotlight. They do this every day, and they do it with integrity and professionalism. It is certainly my honor and privilege to be their director. And those are my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Powers. So we're going to go to questions, commentaries from the members when we start with Ms. Leyva.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Good afternoon, Mr. Powers. I enjoyed meeting with you yesterday. I think we had a good discussion about what your job looks like and what a difficult job it can be. You talked a little bit about the sufficient services for parolees and lack thereof. Can you go into a little bit of detail about that and what it is you think they need? What services are they lacking?
Well, We're growing in parole population. There's never going to be enough slots for everyone in our system, regardless of what system we're referring to. The key components for offenders to reintegrate back into our communities are stable housing and jobs, meaningful employment. When we have offenders come out and we can put them into jobs and we can put them into a stable living environment, their recidivism is significantly lower than those who come out who are transient, who don't have a means to support themselves and those types of things. So one of the first things I did as I became director of DAPO was to meet with DRP staff and stress the importance of expanding on those transitional programs that we have in the communities, the day reporting centers, the transitional housing for long-term offenders, to expand those beds so that we don't have parolees who don't have a stable place to go every night, who have to couch surf or who are living in tent camps, things like that. We've worked with the local workforce or the state-level workforce development board to ensure that going forward, parolees and probationers will be incorporated into the 14 areas of the state plan. Each one of those 14 areas will have ex-offenders as a population of emphasis to address the employment gap that we have. So, you know, we need more substance abuse treatment programs. We need more housing. We need more job training. We're working in each of those areas. As I said in some of the responses to the questions, you know, we struggle with citing some of these. There's sometimes resistance to establishing some of these programs. But coming from the local level, as I have, I'm hoping that those relationships will help us to kind of work through some of those issues.
Okay, very good. So a housing first model.
Yes.
Okay, got it. We also talked a little bit about Medi-Cal, and my question was, how do we make sure that the parolees know that they have access to Medi-Cal, and you were going to try and find that? Do you have an answer?
I did.
Thank you.
And the question you asked was brilliantly simple, which is the best kind of question, which was, okay, so we have 90% of these offenders who come out and are signed up for Medi-Cal, what then? Do we teach them how to access the service? We give them the eligibility, they get a card, but do they actually know how to go get it? Which was a great question that I didn't have an answer to. So I went back and we did check. Our staff actually give the parolees a location-specific packet that has the treatment providers in their area that they're paroled to. And then obviously as they report to the parole agents in the offices, those agents also have that information. So I would say that, yes, we are doing more than just telling them they're eligible for the services. We are giving them the resources. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that packet stays with them in perpetuity. So that's why we also have the agents able to guide them as well.
Great. Good answer. Thank you very much. No further questions, Mr. Pro Tem.
Ms. Leva, Ms. Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. And thank you so much for being here, and I'm sorry we were a bit late. Can I ask, in terms of the offices, the facilities, 52 offices covering California, what counties don't have an office? Is this an issue or barrier to parolees?
Well, I'm sure you're not going to be surprised when I say the most rural northern counties, we have a regional approach to that. So you may have one office that serves several counties in the northern region. One of the things that I've pushed on since I became the director is exactly to your point, which is the location of the offices is as or more critical than the quantity of offices. For instance, in Los Angeles, we have an office near downtown in Alameda, it's on Alameda, that 6,000 parolees are assigned to. It's a mega office. Frankly, it's not well placed to serve them. And what happened was when parole was downsized because of AB 109, offices had to be closed because we had fewer parolees. And some of those offices that were closed based on leases expiring versus what the functional reason was to do it. So we've engaged with Department of Finance and internally to look at the location of the offices, the size. Maybe we don't need a mega office. We'd be better off with three regional offices so that not just the parolees, but the agents don't have to travel as far to get into the office to then turn around and go back out in the field and those kinds of things.
So that's a focus of trying to be more strategic?
Exactly. To take the services closer to those people who use them, yes.
Okay. And so at least in our area, I've heard from the VA that they are having trouble finding psychiatrists and psychologists. Are you having an issue with that type of staffing?
Not in the on the parole side. Okay. I believe on the institutional side, that's a struggle, that has been a struggle, but I can't speak to that directly. But on the parole side, I think we're doing okay in that area.
Okay. Accessing
services is in the community can be difficult. And
right.
To your question on offices, you have two offices in San Diego. Frankly, I think you should have a third out in your East County area. Mm-hmm. Because again, we've got Escondido to the north and Chula Vista to the south, but so we've got individuals coming from East San Diego County to the furthest regions. And I think that's a good example of having the offices more appropriately.
Okay. So on, and I'm so not surprised to hear housing is the biggest issue. It's certainly something I've worked on in San Diego. And when we do the point in time count and find out who's on the street with homeless individuals, this is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. Are there best practices that you're aware of for sex offender parolees? Because that seems to be, I mean, we have a problem with housing just generally. And after AB 109, you know, I thought a positive impact would be that sheriffs and counties would be more interested in doing housing because they would have their own folks to stake in the ground and the probation there. And they're struggling. So, but as it relates to this other population of people, which are hardest of the hardest to house, are there best practices you're aware of anywhere in the country that helps us?
There, not really, okay. That I'm aware of. I spent 10 years on the Sex Offender Management Board, so okay. we were exposed to a lot of promising practices, not so promising practices, you know, bad practices. We've got about 6,000 sex offenders who are on GPS monitoring under parole supervision in California. We struggle with finding compliant housing for them, and we have always struggled, certainly prior to my time and for many years previous to that. It's not an easy population.
Right.
And then if you have a sex offender who has mental health issues on top of it or health issues, to try and find programs that address them that are also compliant with sex offender issues is doubly difficult.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the lack of, I would say, resources for the housing, the community-based services, it seems like when we did AB 109, we wanted to give flexibility and resources back to the local communities. But it sounds like budgetarily we took away too much from your system. Because you're struggling to get the resources and the money?
I'll tell you, well, I don't know that it's money as much as we struggle in a couple of ways. Number one was, we had 35 prisons that within
right.
CDCR, we were trying to stand up programs across all prisons, which was all-consuming, frankly, for DRP. They were singularly focused on that. So parole being a small part of that wasn't necessarily at the top of the wish list when it came time for establishing programs. The other part of it, frankly, is we also struggle with some NIMBYism issues. And I will tell you, probation struggles with it as well as parole. So when it comes to citing, we've actually had contracts ready to execute that we have not been able to pull off because of pushback. We're expanding in day reporting centers and those kinds of things. A lot of it, I think if we do some quality outreach in working with the locals, I think we can address some of those. But, there's that initial, oh, no, you're going to put these people in my community. And typically our response is, no, they're already in your community.
Right.
We need to provide some treatment for them and make it safer for them to be in your community.
So you mentioned in your comments with a number of the Rules Committee staff members, several collaborative projects that you've initiated along with county partners. What do you believe to be the most promising, and particularly in regards to scalability?
We have a jointly operated day reporting center up in Butte County that has had some phenomenal outcome numbers from them. And we are in the process, when I say we, DRP, I mean the collective CDCR, we are in the process of doing the same sort of model with several other counties out there as well to kind of leverage the facilities, the programs that probation has already put in place, and put our parolees into those programs as well. So we jointly operate, and CDCR will provide our portion of the funding for it. I think it's a great model.
Right. Thank you so much, Mr. Powers.
Thank you very much, Ms. Atkins. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. I don't have any questions. I've known Mr. Powers for many years, and I think he'll do an excellent job continuing this role. So,
thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you much, Mr. Vice Chair. Last but not least, Mr. Berryhill.
I don't have any questions either. We've checked with Sheriff Christensen. He loves you. I love you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Senator.
I'll be supporting him.
Thank you very much, Mr. Berryhill. Okay, why don't we go to those who are going to testify in support of today's nominee, Mr. Powers. Those who are in support of today's nominees, of today's nominee, I should say, those in support. You don't have to raise your hands, only if you're going to come and testify. I'm going to ask you to be very brief, because I'm looking at a single space, full page. I don't think that's going to happen.
I'll make it much briefer than that. Good afternoon. Daniel Sanchez on behalf of the Chief Probation Officers of California. We are certainly here pleased to support the appointment of Mr. Jerry Powers today. He's had a very long and distinguished career in probation, including serving as the president for the Chief Probation Officers. He's very, very knowledgeable and has extensive experience on both the local and state landscape, both of which we believe will serve him well in this capacity. So urge your support today, and certainly are pleased to be here to support Mr. Powers' appointment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Next witness in support.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Corey Salzillo here on behalf of the California's. Corey Salzillo, S-A-L-Z-I-L-L-O, on behalf of the California State Sheriff's Association. Also here in support of Mr. Powers' nomination. We, in the interest of time and brevity, we would just say that we've worked with Mr. Powers, his team, in multiple different situations over the years, and CDCR and parole as well. And so we are very grateful for the governor for his nomination of Mr. Powers, and we urge this committee to support his confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other one? Please, go ahead.
And Linnea Koopmans with the County Behavioral Health Directors Association, also here in support of Mr. Powers' confirmation in the role of Director of Parole with CDCR. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other folks in support? Seeing none, those in opposition? Also seeing no opposition, could I get a motion for today's nominee? We have a motion made by Ms. Leyva. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, aye. Berryhill.
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Mr. Powers, congratulations. Okay, colleagues, we're going to move on this agenda. I'd like to lift the call on files item number 2 through 11. Files item number 2 through 11. Let's lift the call. No, we already have a motion. We're just going to lift the call.
Senator Berryhill?
Aye.
Berryhill, aye.
Okay, we'll close that at a 5-0 vote. What we're going to do, colleagues, is we're going to go into an executive session. So I'm going to ask all the folks who are present in the room, if they could be so kind enough to please leave. We're going to adjourn this meeting.